Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The U.S. Open, this year at Oakmont.
Did you find it?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. That is cooked beyond belief. That's more than half baked there. It was burnt to a crisp. Oh, my gosh.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
U.S. Open Week with Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
It's very good.
Gotta make that par now, and that's what Oakmont does to you.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on a Monday morning edition. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Oh, what a great Monday. Nice weekend, good weather. Walked last night at around 8:30. I'm like, this is exactly what I want to live in. Felt like it was 80 degrees.
Is the temp. That's where you want to be.
I like it warm.
A little bit warm late in the day is nice. Yeah. When the sun's gone down, it's not quite beating on you the way it is earlier in the day. It feels good.
You know, if you miss the first hour, you can always catch our podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, 1080fan.com, etc. Dirt doesn't have air conditioning.
No, I've been up since 1:45, so, you know, things are going
like
great.
One of those tossing and turning, you sleep for 10 minutes and
no,
wake up.
Like legitimately up since 1:45. Oh. The little guy was up for about 4 hours last night, and then it gets to a point where you're like, there's no point in going back to sleep, because at this point it's like 3:40, and that's just not a good idea.
Do you and your wife fight over, like, who does the overnight thing, given your job?
She does the majority of the heavy lifting overnight. It was one where he was already up for, like, an hour and a half, and then it was like, I don't know what to do. And
I can't sleep.
I'll get up. It's loud. He's crying. I'm already awake anyways, and I'm sweating and sticking to the sheets to begin with, so maybe I'll go walk around outside.
We'll talk with Dan Wetzel. The NCAA house settlement has finally been figured out.
Woohoo!
And now we're going to get a new version of cheating, I think, in college football.
Where do you want all your money to go in Corvallis? All to basketball.
You know, I got to be honest. And if we have text police that can help me here, are we in the lawsuit? Because not every team was in the lawsuit.
Yeah, I don't really know. I haven't followed it that closely in terms of, I know a lot of former athletes are in the lawsuit. I don't know if any universities technically were.
Well, the Big Ten and SEC schools were involved with it because they want to try to get some of the squared, I believe, is what
I read. Well, sure. They're now like the leading government body of this new entity. Yeah. The Power Four get to call all the shots.
Well, the AAC,
which that'll end up well,
is going to have a $10 million allotment for their salary cap versus like Oregon, et cetera, is going to start at 20.
Yeah.
And it's probably going to jump to the 30s.
I think every school can do 20 if they want to. You don't have to spend all 20, but you have up to $20 million to spend if you want to.
And all the players are going to spend 20. We know that, okay?
Yes.
But it is. There is an interesting part of this, despite the cheating element that's definitely going to happen. How much of your school's salary cap, quote unquote, because the other thing is you can still do NIL and the collectives can still pay, although a report says 70% of collectives would not be approved.
This is such nonsense.
But 90% of NIL contracts would be.
Yeah.
They're going to figure out how to make them all approved. We know this because they've been cheating for years.
Yeah.
So, like, they have a salary cap, but they can still be paid on the side by the NIL, and that doesn't count against the cap.
Yeah.
I don't know how to sort this out, but if we're going by the cap, just the cap, how much of it do you want towards football, I think is going to be an interesting conversation for people, because I'm an Oregon State guy, and I'm telling you, I'd be spending not as much on football as I would on men's basketball being relevant again.
Sure.
Women's basketball continuing to be a juggernaut, and I want that baseball team to succeed.
Just keep going to Omaha every year.
Exactly.
Best team money can buy. So I think the reports are from most of the power players in college athletics that they're estimating of spending $15-ish million a year on football.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's somewhere in the range of $3 million to $4 million on men's basketball, and then the rest of it goes to everybody else. So the majority of the money will be spent on the two
revenue-generating
sports. That's just the way it's going to work, and that's no different than what NIL payments are, right? Like, there are some unique outliers that make a lot of money in other sports, but for the most part, the high NIL earners are in football and men's basketball. This is the most NCAA response to a problem that I've ever seen. And by that, I mean it's just going to create a whole nother set of problems. Like, there's been some reporting on this, some reaction to it, that this is the end. Look at this. We found a solution. We have a salary cap. Everything's going to be above the board. We're going to get an even playing field. None of these big NIL boosters are going to come in and buy teams. Like, this is going to end horribly for them. Mark my words. There will be lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit. How do you get away with telling somebody what they can or cannot be paid in a free market system? How is that possibly going to work without lawsuits? There's already a follow-up lawsuit that we've seen. Do you remember the kid at Wisconsin who transferred to Miami about a year ago?
He was touting that he had a 2-year deal, but he didn't care and he left anyway.
He signed this new revenue-sharing agreement, which a lot of schools have made their players start signing over the last year and a half to 2 years, thinking that this was on the horizon. Mm-hmm. He signed it with Wisconsin and then still ended up bailing and transferring to Miami, and they're now heading to court to see if these are enforceable contracts. Like, we all know where the end result is, and the end result is in collective bargaining and a union and paying players and having this be essentially professional sports, which it basically is becoming. But that we, of course, have to do a quarter measure, and there will be more lawsuits. And good luck telling rich people who spend money in their NIL collectives what they can or cannot spend on athletes. It's going to be hilarious to see the responses.
We'll talk with Wetzel at 7:30 about it. This happened late last night. Doc Parker.
Keljo comes set. Nelly's 3-2 pitch taken. Strike three, called. The Beavers return to Omaha. Nelson Keljo flexes, throws his glove towards his own dugout, and is mobbed by his teammates as the Beavers celebrate the return to the College World Series, winning the decisive super regional game by a final score, the Beavers 14, Florida State 10, a wild one, an exciting one from start to finish. Next stop for the Beavers, Omaha, Nebraska. And listen to these fans at Goss Stadium chanting, Omaha.
So Mike, Doc Parker, and Learfield Sports on the call there.
Look at those bees.
They get back to the Omaha College World Series for the first time since 2018. It'd been a minute since they'd gotten there.
That doesn't seem like that was that long ago, does it?
But it is, too.
It is,
you know?
I know.
Like both. Both are true. but they punched their ticket again. Canham proves he's not a choke artist, even though Oregon State fan during the first game was asking if he lost the clutch gene for the program. There was literally somebody that responded to Kerry Ager's like, he doesn't got the Casey clutch gene. I'm not saying it.
He doesn't have that it factor. He's lacking in the it category.
Well, the game of the series was really Friday. Sunday was a just blockbuster of scoring, 24 combined runs. It got interesting at the end there. Saturday was a pitcher's duel.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest with you, I didn't think I'd say this. I was really annoyed by the broadcast Saturday.
How come?
Because Oregon State's pitcher had a better performance than Jamie Arnold, who was going to be the number one pick in the draft, but they kept just jocking Jamie Arnold.
Who was the color analyst on those games? Do we know
Devon
his name?
Travis.
He's a former Florida State.
Oh, I couldn't tell that he was a Florida. He didn't mention it 8,642 times over that three-game series.
I had to listen to Papa Ortner complain about it for an hour.
Dude, good
in
for
the
Papa
prelude.
Ortner.
I was very upset.
I have no rooting interest. Actually, that's not true. I root for Oregon State at this point. My team's never been to Omaha, and I don't really care that much. So it's like, go Beavs. This is what you guys got, and I'm happy for you that you get a little satisfaction out of the weekend. Even I was sitting in my house this weekend yelling at the television at this bro. Like, we get it, dude. We understand that you went to Florida State. You've never won a championship. Don't they have the record for most Omaha appearances?
Like
without
25 appearances.
25 times
crazy.
They've been, and they've never won a championship in this sport. Like, get the hell out of here, dude. You're playing a program who's got three of these things, and you're acting like Florida State baseball is God's gift to earth.
Well, it's not only that he told us he went to Florida State and played in the bigs. I don't know if you know that he played in the bigs. He also wanted to tell you 80,000 times, I've never been to Goss Stadium. It's quite an atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
And then he would mention Florida State segment or stadium 17 times after that, and how it's the greatest atmosphere in all of college baseball.
Well, I just love that we have. I mean, this was a real thing. It's not a big percentage. Again, I think it's the smallest of minorities I'm talking about. But you had Beaver fan legitimately.
Yeah, it's a thing.
I don't know if this guy could win the big one.
It's so stupid.
Wednesday skips.
Yeah.
And with two out in the bottom of the ninth inning, down 4-1, they come back and tie the game, walk it off in extras. And I think Kerry ended up retweeting, like, well, this didn't age well, did it? It's
oopsies.
Like, yeah, clutch gene stuff is the dumbest of stuff to talk about. But Oregon State fought back Friday. They tied it up. They won it. Saturday, pitcher's duel. Florida State just bested them. The bullpen couldn't hold it for Oregon State. Kleinschmidt was unbelievable for them. Went over 110 pitches. Only gave up one run. Like, he was lights out. Bullpen blows the game. Offense doesn't get it going. And then off the bat, just first inning, you got 7-2. Just instantly. And I don't want to tout too much because I didn't know who was really going to win the series.
Sure.
What did I text you in swag?
That you needed 11 runs yesterday.
I said Oregon State needs 11 or more runs if they're going to win this game. How many runs did Florida State finish with?
They ended up with 10 runs.
Boom!
Boom, bitch.
It just felt like those bats were going to get going at some point, and I didn't know how much I trusted Oregon State's pitching to hold them down. That was fun, and they're going back to Omaha for the ninth time.
My college baseball takeaways from the weekend are, one, the umpires are terrible.
Jesus, what the...
Just
the,
horrible.
The strike zones. Horrible. What are their strike zones?
Strike zones all over the map. Even that strike to end the game.
It was terrible.
That was definitely a ball. And I'm like, wait, the game's over? Because the kid was like started walking towards first base. I think it was a full count, if I'm not wrong. And he was like walking to first base. And then they pan over to the pitcher. And he's like throwing his glove in the air. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess the game's over. So the umpires are terrible. Watching games without a strike zone, first world problems, really frustrating. Like, I need the superimposed strike zone.
I kind of liked it.
You like going old school?
Well, because I think this for both teams. I actually didn't think they were good strike zones. I thought Oregon
State
got
ways,
calls
yeah.
that were I'm like, that's... Like, the last pitch to your point, I'm like, that's not a strike.
That definitely wasn't a strike.
But I think that was, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get the crowd on my side.
14-10. This game's going on 4 hours, dude. I want to go home.
How easy... My takeaway is kind of the same thing. Like, how easy in college it is to manipulate those dudes. Just throw it a little low, yeah. catch, and then instantly bring up. They're calling
frame
it a strike.
Frame it. You're going to get the
call. Frame it good, and you're getting the call.
So those were my two big takeaways from the weekend. Outside of the Florida State guy on the broadcast being absolutely insufferable for the entire time, it was the pucker factor yesterday had to have been relatively strong, I would imagine, considering how Saturday went and then how the game started. Because you don't win Saturday. Friday night was a game that could have gone either way. You got a little lucky there late. We're pulling one out. All right, we found a way to win.
Yeah.
Then you lose Saturday. Then they immediately jump on you in the first inning.
I was
right
like,
out of
oh,
the gate,
no.
you're
Here
like, oh. And then what are we, like, you score seven. You just
Crazy.
Turn around and score seven on them. And there's no better feeling. Like, I know there are a few moments later in the game where you're like, okay, can we just, like, not walk guys and maybe not load the bases every inning? But there's nothing better than a celebration game at home with great weather, and it's essentially a non-sweater. Like, you go up 7-2, and you're immediately like, we're going to win this thing, aren't we?
I'm going to push back on you, buddy.
Were you sweating bullets still?
Yeah. I really was.
Then wanted to turn into like 11-3.
Yeah,
at one point.
Because Caraway gets up, bases loaded, and I remember saying out loud, got to be nice if you hit a dinger here. And I even did in that voice. And then two, you know, whatever it was later, he hits the home run grand slam. Even at 11-3, I'm like,
you're still sweating that one.
I was. They're a good team.
I know they're a good team.
They had good offense, and then like they got some runs back, and slowly but surely, and then they go back up 10, and then they cut back into it, and I'm just like, oh, when they got to 10, even the last batter, I'm like, oh, God, just get out of this inning.
Just
get out
end
of this
the damn
inning.
Thing already, please.
So I'm telling you, I'm raising my hand. I had pucker factor all the way into the end, which is why I stayed up till 9:35 to watch this thing.
God, that thing did end late. The other thing, too, about the umpiring in those games, we need a time limit on reviews. Like, this happened a couple times in Oregon's regional, too, when I was watching them, and the Women's College World Series, to be honest.
Yeah.
Dude, the reviews are insanely long.
Yeah.
That play at first base where we did his hand get into
did
the
Did you think it was safe or out?
I mean, to me, it was
a tie.
I saw two
angles that said
I know.
They got it, and then I saw an angle that said Oregon State got it, and I'm like, if I can't decide overall, it should be the call on the field, right?
Should stand, right? There's not enough evidence to overturn it, but of course they overturn it, and of course the review took like 10 minutes. And I'm just, you get 2 minutes here, all right? If you can't figure this thing out in 2 minutes, this isn't an NBA situation where you got to put time back on the clock figure that crap out. This is just, was he out or was he not out? Just move on to the next play. That kind of stuff was insufferable.
There is something else that you mentioned with delaying the game I want to talk about from that game. Canham punching his ticket for the first time as a manager to Omaha. It's a great story having an alum that, you know, won two World Series with them doing it. So we'll get to that coming up next, and then we'll talk with Dan Wetzel coming up at the bottom of the hour. Dirt and Sprague back with more on The Fan.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, from time to time, I would say probably more than time to time, Dirt and I have to give opinions, and then we end up coming in being way wrong. And I appreciate when people say, hey, that was me. I wasn't right.
Hand up. I was wrong on that one.
The listener, one of our listeners, I guess, was the one that did it that I was referencing about the clutch gene. He says, hey, I'm the guy who said the clutch gene. I'm so happy to be wrong. Hell yeah, man. It's okay to be wrong. That's okay.
It's a good thing when it happens to your team because then at least there's a little bit of happiness at the outcome of it.
Right. Want to remind you guys, Tuesday, June 24th, put it on your calendar now. Make plans. If you haven't done so already, go to 1080thefan.com because your local Toyota dealers presents the 11th annual Fan Golf Classic out at Langdon Farms Golf Club. My God, is it right around the corner?
It's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
It's 2 weeks. Well,
right?
Yeah, it's Tuesday. June 24th.
2 weeks from tomorrow.
Tuesday.
When the hell did that come up?
June 24th, brought to you, of course, by Henderson and Daughter Windows and Doors and Philbrook Law Accident Injury Lawyers. Victor Rico's Breakfast Burritos on hand, lunch as well. Matt's Barbecue will be on hand, too. We'll be hanging out. You can go to 1080thefan.com to purchase your foursome for the morning round because the afternoon round is gonzo.
And the morning round usually ends up being the one you want to play. Considering the heat this weekend, it might get a day like that. Get out there, nice little dew on the grass early in the morning. It's a delightful time to play golf.
So, you know, I've been mentioning this. I think the Oregon State not getting to the super not getting to Omaha with Canham and the whole, like, is he the guy to lead it? I haven't liked it. I think it's overreactionary. I think he's a good alum coach who's highly thought of. There was a good story. I just retweeted it this morning from Corey Brock, our good friend who used to cover the Mariners. He wrote a piece about Canham turning down a Mariners opportunity to go be the coach at Oregon State.
Yeah.
It was a dream job. Being a Mariner guy, and he turned it down for the ultimate dream job, and that's to run his alma mater. And because they haven't been to Omaha since Casey left, it's been this whole, like, this. I don't think this guy can do it. I don't like what this guy does. I think they're lacking this. They're lacking that. And I don't know if they're going to win the World Series. It's a big ask to go win the World Series. It's been a weird tournament. There's not a lot of high-ranked teams here. I just think it's such a good story of Mitch Canham leading Oregon State back to Omaha, being the guy that says, you know what, I haven't won the whole thing. It's hard to do that, but getting to Omaha in itself is a huge achievement, and he did it for the first time for his alma mater.
I mean, it's one of those, you're just going to slowly get the monkeys off your back, and this was the first one hit for him to get rid of. And now you've been to Omaha, so a lot of that dumb chatter will hopefully die down. It is funny how quickly we expect, especially considering his first year at Oregon State was the COVID year, where the season's canceled 2 weeks in and they don't even play the rest of the season. That was his first year. So when you essentially look at it, he's now had five full seasons. Well, this one's not quite finished, but you get my point. He's been to a regional every year he's been there. He's been to three super regionals now, and now finally a College World Series. And so this idea that he's been disappointing or hasn't lived up to the hype, like, We expect greatness so quickly, and for you to just simply put it together like a snap of a finger when that's not the reality, especially in a sport like baseball, man, where Oregon State won a national title because Arkansas couldn't catch a pop fly.
Yeah, they shouldn't have had that.
That
title.
Was one of their titles. That's baseball in a nutshell.
Right.
Sometimes you get breaks. Sometimes a team gets hot. Sometimes a hitter carries you. Sometimes a pitcher carries you. And a lot of those things happened the last time Oregon State won a title, and now you find yourself in Omaha. And I feel like everything on this point out is icing on the cake. Like, he's gotten a big monkey off of his back. Any of that chatter should go away. He clearly can win big games. He can clearly get them there. And I think he deserves far more credit than most coaches usually deserve, considering the circumstances that they were in. Their conference abandoned them. Everybody else in Oregon State athletics essentially took a step back. I know the women's basketball ended up making the tournament, and that was an awesome story for them to win their conference this year.
But everybody, they lost that whole roster.
They lost all. Everybody else has regressed to a certain point, and that was to be expected. Baseball has not. And his idea, I don't know how much it, you know, was him or the athletic department or who was the driving
force
behind it, but
it was him.
To go independent was huge, and it got them home field advantage in a super regional because they played a butt ton of road games this year, and it helped their RPI. And so he deserves a ton of credit for getting them there, and I'm rooting for him to go win another national championship.
We got this cut from Brenna Green of Coin. Here is him last night, Mitch Canham, in the post game on Oregon State punching the ticket to Omaha.
I'm overwhelmed with emotion. What an incredible game. What an incredible way that it was supposed to happen. You knew that it would. And we maximized our amount of home games to make everyone happy. Omaha's in the Beaver blood, man. And so, you know, it'll be the first time stepping in that stadium. First time for me. First time for each and every one of these guys, except for Zach Taylor. But for each of us to just know that that's our home too. And I know Beaver Nation's going to show up and pour into these guys the entirety of the time. I'm so excited for you guys to see it.
And me and Mitch Canham are the same age.
That's pretty wild.
I look at him and I'm like, man, you look like a you know, a distinguished man.
you got your life put together.
I still feel like a little boy sometimes.
Way to go, Mitch.
Yeah, I'm almost there, Mitch.
Go, Beavs. Going to Omaha.
Two takeaways, too, from this. One, and I'm coming late to the party. I say this every year. I'm always honest. I know Beaver fan watches year-round. That's a diehard. I follow it. I don't watch it. One, this new wave of college baseball. Actually, there's a couple things. Let me get a couple things off this. I love what they do in college baseball when they replace the pitcher and the pitcher has to wait to hand the ball to the reliever.
You like that one? You stand on the mound until he comes out?
I just think it screams team versus hand it to the manager, be pissed off, walk away, other guy runs out and trumpets. The other thing is college baseball, and I don't know if Major League Baseball kind of has the same thing, but they take timeouts and then an offensive coordinator goes out there and talks to a hitter.
Yeah.
Did you notice that this weekend?
It's very unique and strange.
Very, very different. I'm not used to it. It throws me off.
Does not happen in Major League Baseball.
And the final thing is, and you talked about the delay in this game, they had to meet several times to warn the teams because there was a little back and forth. College baseball just fully leans into the trash talk, and I love it.
It is so bro-y.
I do.
It's so over the top bro-y. It's like the epitome of baseball culture of the hair, the eye black, the sunglasses.
Yep.
It is straight. Every single college baseball player looks like they're straight out of Central Casting. That if you just picture in your head, what does a college baseball player look like? I feel like 97% of them look exactly like that when you turn on a game. Yeah. A lot of that going on this weekend. Some of it does get annoying for me. The offensive coordinator meetings are hilarious. Like you can get away with
saying
that. He's going out, like chatting it up.
Is he just delaying the pitcher, or is he like, hey, look for the fastball, look for the curve, look for the breaking? Like, what really is the conversation? All right, we got to be aggressive here, but not too aggressive. Like, all right, coach, I think that's what I was trying to do.
I mean, it's one thing if you end up laying down a bunt. At least there was some sort of discussion that led to a result there. But if not,
I'm not saying the guy doesn't do anything
on the field. You know,
want to know what that conversation is?
Just chat it up, man. The atmosphere looked like it was awesome down there. And for Canham, dude, like you know that he hears some of this chatter. Like everybody is human, and everybody's going to get wind of it from time to time.
How about the beer wall, by the way?
The beer wall was phenomenal behind home plate.
Boy, that became its own meme.
Stacking that thing up, dude.
Now, were those really... Somebody asked me, like, hey, were those really drank by those people right there?
No chance. That was a collaborative effort.
Did somebody bring cans in from home and say, I had to get a couple empties from last week?
I think that was a communal effort. Like, everybody in the front saw that somebody started it, and then they just started stacking their fresh empties.
That's kind of what
there.
I was thinking.
Like,
yeah.
Everybody wants to be a part of it. It's like when you get those snakes out in the outfield. Everybody's drinking one, and then you add one on top of the snake. Like, that's how you do it.
There's a good atmosphere down there. I wish the crowd would have been mic'd a little more, because I kept seeing that they were saying it's the loudest they'd ever heard it.
Well, it's not as loud as Florida State Stadium, according to the broadcast. Florida State Stadium's the loudest in the country.
It's probably bigger. But...
I mean, they have all those national championship banners. Oh, wait, no, they don't. Sorry, just checking. Yeah, sorry.
Three of
sorry.
Those, Florida
that's,
State.
That's right. They don't have any of those in baseball. Zero of those.
He should be commended more, not only for doing it for his alma mater, but, like, navigating the waters of this conference bowl.
Not easy to do, man.
Being an independent, and I just kept thinking, was it better for Oregon State football to have gone independent versus joining the Mountain West?
Well,
but I don't know how that
you
was.
You didn't join the Mountain West. You've reformed the Pac-12.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though. Like,
I know what you mean.
Agreement, a scheduling agreement. Yeah. And again, maybe that's what Barnes tried, or maybe Bray was advocating for it. I haven't seen clear-cut, you know, did they try or did they not. But it worked for Oregon State baseball, and I know football is different, but I commend him for that. It couldn't have been easy to have to go through that situation.
Well, and one Beaver Baseball P1 texted in and basically said it further solidifies them as the program on the West Coast, which isn't undoubted. Yeah. Like, you're not even in the conference anymore, and you're still going to Omaha. First time in a while that you've been there.
I also kind of already thought that was
The case. So, yeah. You've won three national championships. That kind of solidifies it, and now you're going back to Omaha as an independent. It's pretty badass. Football is such a different animal. I don't know if it would have worked.
I don't know if it
would have
worked
either.
Because
you need the conference affiliation to have a pathway to the playoff.
Without, but you weren't going to go to a playoff this year.
Well, not. Oh, are you saying just in the short term?
Yeah, just in the short term.
Well, that's essentially what they are. They are essentially an independent right now.
I mean,
for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, but half that schedule's Mountain West.
Not anymore. It's not.
Well, but yeah, but it is. Because
now you're playing some
Tulsas.
You're playing some Lafayette.
Yeah, I guess this year it's more independent-ish. I'll give you that.
You got the Cougs twice on there. Pac-2 championship.
Let's not talk about that.
But you need, like, Oregon State baseball can live in this world. Football needs a pathway to the postseason.
What about hoops?
That's the only way they can do it. Independent makes sense in hoops. All those, similar thing. You win your conference in hoops, you can still go.
Or get fifth in the WCC, and how's that reflect on you?
Now you got Gonzaga. You ain't beating them.
Yeah, well. So, yeah. Let's go to the Daily Ticker. Dan Wetzel, our good friend. The NCAA House settlement has been solved, but will it fix anything? We'll talk with Dan Wetzel for the Daily Ticker next on The Van.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is brought to you by Pelican Brewing, independently brewing on the Oregon coast since 1996. Discover even more flavors from your local coast with Pelican's new craft sodas. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a Monday, brought to you as always by our great friends at Pelican Brewing Company. The return of warmer weather, boy, was it this weekend. Even our man over there, Will Ortner, was over at the coast drinking a Pelicano, their summer seasonal beer. It is back, available in clear glass bottles. It is refreshment that you can see. I don't know if you know this, but all of our problems in college athletics have been solved. The House settlement has been approved.
How about that?
A new era of kumbaya will take over, and joining us now to talk about that is Dan Wetzel, good friend of the program, at Dan Wetzel on Twitter. Go give him a follow, ESPN senior writer and a New York Times best-selling author. Dan, good morning to you. Is this the end to all of our college athletic issues that we've been dealing with over the last couple of years? What are the big takeaways from the House settlement this weekend?
Yeah, good luck with that. The issues are it's the feature, not the bug of college athletics. It's supposed to be totally chaotic. It's a ridiculous concept, right? The whole thing is ridiculous. 134 different football teams playing for one title, schools attached, big, you know, just the whole thing. So no, not ending anything. I mean, look, this is their attempt at, you know, they've been screaming for guardrails and limits and stability and all these things. A lot of old school coaches, particularly athletic departments and things like that. That's been their rallying cry the last few years. The wild, wild west is what college sports have become. I think it's always been the wild, wild west. We had like an FBI investigation a few years ago with like 10 guys got indicted. Like that was pretty wild.
SMU existed back in the 80s, you know.
The Wild West is fun. Like, how many great movies did we watch? The Wild West is not so bad. But yeah, that's what they're going with. We will see how it plays out. This is an attempt to, obviously, just on a simple overview, like, you know, amateurism is officially dead in college athletics. The concept held on for, 40 years past even the Olympics gave up on it. But schools will pay athletes directly with shares of media rights and ticket sales and all of their direct budget. So there's that element right there. It's very historic. How these athletic departments will be able to manage that, they have built themselves up with the number of teams, the number of support staff, the salaries, the facilities that are so nice at so many of these places, based on a business model where they did not have to compensate the athletes or whatever the compensation was, basically tuition, room, and board was relatively low. Now every major school is going to have a 20.5 million this year, and it'll go up to over 30 million in the next 10 years at least. A $20.5 million expenditure. So even the biggest schools, like an Ohio State, that's still 7-8% of new cost, right? Now, maybe they can absorb it, but how do you absorb it at a smaller school? Can you afford all $20 million? Can you afford to spend $20 million and still have a swim program or a tennis team or things like that? Will sports get cut because of this? You have to, you know, where do you invest the money? It's got to be in football and men's basketball because those are the only sports that return dollars on investment that then funds the entire athletic department. So spending money on a star quarterback that fills your stadium and wins you games and does all that returns investment. You could get the best, swimmer and it doesn't. Michael Phelps wasn't making money for wherever, you know, so you can't. you have to invest in football and men's basketball, so can these other sports thrive? So there's a lot of issues there. Then there's just the practicality of, like, since when did anyone ever follow the rules in college athletics? Can you determine how much they're going to limit these NIL deals and say, well, we have an algorithm that tells you what's a real deal and what's not, what's within the market value or not. How is that going to sustain against legal challenges when you're talking about, you know, the basic tenet of you are your value is whatever someone's willing to pay for it, right? So there's a million questions going forward, tons of uncertainty, but this was a step by the establishment of college athletics to create something that has some structure to it, whether it stands or not.
Well, I'm curious, Dan, your thoughts, because you wrote a really good piece on ESPN.com about, you know, used Alabama as an example and talking with Greg Byrne, who's had really, you know, notable stops at Arizona and now at Alabama. I'm kind of curious going forward. So it's a weird thing. We have a salary cap, but we kind of don't, because NIL is still allowed as a side to pay players, and it's not going to count against your cap. They also have the collective issue, and the collectives, they say, are not things that should be approved. And so the collectives, you know, are going to figure out how to make it approved. And so we do have a salary cap, but we really don't. And you talk about the old West, like, I feel like it's actually going to get dirtier somehow. Am I wrong in that read?
Yeah, I found the last few years, I get there's a lot of things fans don't like, particularly the transfer portal is what fans don't like. Well, they don't like it when players are transferring out. They like it when they transfer in, but they don't like the out. But there's a lot of things that fans understandably kind of reacted to, like, I'm not really comfortable with this, or this takes some used to, or I just don't like this, and all of that is fine. But I found that when things are on the table, opposed to under the table, it's just easier to know what's going on. And so if a player is sitting there saying, hey, I'll transfer to your school for $1 million, at least you know, where it used to be like, well, is this put, did they, you know, underpay? We had NCAA investigators work in parking lots to see who had what car and why is it, you know, all of that stuff was always going on. So I found it to be actually more refreshing just be wide open. I'm more of a free market person, just mm-hmm. personally. Let the thing play out. It didn't bother me. It was wild, but a school that wanted to win at something could now win. Your historical success no longer was the predetermining factor of whether you could win. You know, look at Texas Tech's softball team, right? They made the final game. They almost won the championship. They're paying their star pitcher $1 million a year. They're going to pay her $1.2 million next year. That doesn't offend me. Like, I'm not okay. Now, was Texas Tech ever that good in softball before? I don't personally know. But so what? If Texas Tech wants to be good in softball, let them. I think you saw in football, you saw what we went from even 6-7 years ago, where you're entering a season and it was basically like, it's going to be Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, or like, maybe Clemson, maybe LSU. That was the only teams that really had a chance to win. I think you're looking at 20, 25 programs that are competing to try to win. And you can bridge things like geography, right? You take programs in your state, the hardest part for Oregon and Oregon State, but certainly Oregon, is just you're not proximity to the talent. But, well, and you can pay, for the travel of people to come and visit and things like that, all of a sudden that matters less. And you can build a team that isn't sitting there saying, well, you can't be good because you're not located in Florida or Texas or something like that. And so we saw a lot more teams get really good. The last couple of years, we've had Notre Dame and TCU play for the championship. That was never happening before. Michigan won it. They hadn't been a real contender in a long time. Ohio State won it. They've been good. Penn State's going into the season maybe number one. Like, you're seeing, I'm not saying those are small operations. Oregon had the best regular season last year. These are big programs, but they weren't Georgia and Alabama, right? They weren't that level. So we saw a lot of stuff. Or Boise State wants to keep Ashon Gentry and have this big year. They can pay him, keep him, great. So I never had a problem with all that. They're trying to condense that and say, well, we're going to determine whether this deal is – did you really earn $1 million? Like, if you're Caitlin Clark and you're with State Farm, or is this just a workaround to pay? I kind of was fine with the workaround.
Yeah, well, all of that is just going to lead to more litigation, which will be interesting. Dan,
yeah, who's going to decide what's an approvable deal it's just versus ridiculous. Saying, like, no, that's not
to
okay.
To Dan's point on the free market, how can you tell somebody what they are or are not exactly. worth? Good luck proving that.
I'll give
court.
You an example.
Yeah.
What was Caitlin Clark worth if you put her into an algorithm and said, okay, we have an All-American basketball player at Iowa, women's basketball player at Iowa. What is her national advertising market worth?
Right.
It's not much.
Yeah.
Until you're Caitlin Clark and you're the most marketable athlete in all of sports.
Yeah.
Then it's worth, she's underpaid.
Oh, 100%. At the end of the day,
I was going to say half of whatever ESPN made during her run at Iowa is what she was worth.
Right. She ends up being underpaid opposed to, but how do you market? You say, well, she's not worth anything. In an algorithm, you say that person gets 50 grand and it's like, no, I get 20 million.
Yeah.
And because I'm Caitlin Clark. So how do you figure that out? Would they have denied all of those deals? That wouldn't be fair to her. So needless to say, there is going to be lawyers involved. Bill, the one thing, the most undefeated team in all of college athletics is billable hours.
Lawyers are getting really rich after this. Dan Wetzel is our guest, ESPN senior writer. He's got a great piece up on this at ESPN.com at Dan Wetzel, as well as his Twitter page. You can go find it there. Last one I got for you, Dan, is just, you know, I come at this from the perspective of it feels like a very NCAA fix where it's basically like a quarter measure, and there's going to be so much more fallout from this, as we're just talking about. Does this end, and I don't know if it's in 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 15 years, who knows, does this end in any other way other than collective bargaining, unionization, full contracts? Like, it seems like that's where all of this is heading, but we're trying to do everything we can to solve the problem before we get to what the ultimate solution will be.
Yeah, the hill they seem to be willing to die on is not letting athletes be employees of the school, even though the schools employ tons of students. They do not want them to be athletes. They don't want to be employees. That could cost them a lot of the smaller sports could get cut and things like that. I get some of their concerns. I just don't know how you get there. You basically need to make them employees, and then you need to collectively bargain. And by the way, this players union of college athletes would be extremely weak. A union's only power is its ability to strike, and you're never getting 10,000 athletes to all agree. It's hard to get 1,000 people at a parts manufacturer in one town in Ohio to agree to a strike. And they're all of the same, you know, they live next to each other. They make the same amount of money. They go to the same schools. Their kids are in the Little League team together, and it's hard to do. You're never getting college athletes to strike. It's never happening. So it's actually a pretty weak union, but you also have rules all over the country, like public employees can't be in unions or this or that. It's 50 different laws. So at some point, they're going to have to be employees. They're trying this. Maybe it buys them X number of years, but I don't see how in the end the Supreme Court is going to say, cool. I don't see how boosters and coaches are going to be like, you're right. I'm not going to pay someone a little extra on the side, or I'm not going to try to bend this rule. We've never seen that in generations of history. And I'm not really sure how this actually works in the end, but this is the attempt, and this is where we're at. Step one.
Yeah.
Step one.
Final one for you, Dan, because we appreciate your time this morning. We love having you on the program. You wrote a great piece. Do you think that they solved the portal problem? Not so much that kids can't transfer ever eventually, but just the year to year, season to season, like, it's hard to follow these teams now, no matter how much of a diehard you are. Football's tough because there's so many players. Basketball, it's like, how invested do I get? They're all going to be gone next year. Do you think that they'll ultimately kind of figure that part of it out?
Not until they can collectively bargain. I don't know. I mean, it's a federal judge in West Virginia who ruled that the portal can go. I mean, how do you make someone go to school somewhere?
Yeah, touche.
At the end, those are the things the judge comes up with, right? Like, okay, I think everyone would agree we shouldn't have two transfer portals in football. You shouldn't be able to transfer after the season and then after spring practice.
Yes.
Just logistically, you can be pro play, but at the same time, how do you tell someone who goes through spring practice, sees they're not going to play, and wants to transfer to somewhere else they can play, or just sits there after their spring? I mean, kids transfer colleges all the time. But you know what? I want to move back home. I want to go there. And then you get into this waiver process, which was one of the problems, and teams denying it. And everyone's got an uncle on dialysis or something. They got to go home and, you know, some sob story. It's just, like, at some point you either have to have a contract with someone, like, now you're here for 2 years, or you ain't playing, you ain't going to college. But how do you deny someone the ability to earn a living or pursue an education? You know, the Sherman Antitrust Act is very, very pesky for the NCAA. They're not big believers in it, but the Supreme Court is. And so this is a real tough thing. The transfer portal, it can be very, very frustrating, but it's not a simple solution of just being like, can't leave. Because if it was your kid, if it was your, you were the player, you'd be like, hey, I got a better opportunity here. And if I have, if you work without a contract, right, at any job, and someone else comes in and says, hey, we'll offer you more money or we'll offer you a better opportunity, you're allowed to go. Now, if you sign a contract, you might have to play that out, or there's going to be remedies. But if you don't, and you can't just sit there and say, well, I turned down this job this week, but another job came in the next week. Like, there's no window. So even the windows could be considered illegal. It's just, it's very complicated. They're trying to jam a square peg in a round hole, and they've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, great stuff. Dan Wetzel, ESPN senior writer, New York Times best-selling author, at Dan Wetzel on Twitter. Go check out his great work on this. The column is up at ESPN.com and his Twitter account. We appreciate the time, man, all breaking down all of this. Hopefully we can catch up again soon.
Take care. Appreciate you.
There you go. Dan Wetzel of ESPN. Yeah, this is going to end well. The Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. With the return of warmer weather, Pelican brings back its summer seasonal beer, Pelicano, available in clear glass bottles. It's refreshment that you can see. What the hell's going on? We'll try and break it down next on The Fam.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, went a little long there. My apologies to the BM. It wasn't my fault. Dan Wetzel wouldn't shut up.
We broke late. That was my. It was all my fault. Put it on me, not Dan. Dan's a good friend of the program.
Dan's a great friend of the program. That was great information. And I do want to talk a little bit about this to start the final hour of the show.
I do, too. I think it's massive.
So Mike Parker is going to join us at 8:15. Mm-hmm. Basically, the bullet points of this are the House settlement has been approved. This has been discussed for God knows how long. It's one of those that's like been in the background of my mind, but I'm not paying that close of attention to it because we're just waiting. Like, when are we going to get there? It finally gets approved. And essentially, the bullet points are it establishes a direct pay-to-play system with the universities to the athletes. They're all going to have about $20 million to give to their athletes. You can break it down however you want it. It is supposed to limit the NIL money being outrageous, which will not happen, but we'll see how that all plays out. And they have basically created this new, what is it, something clearinghouse or clearhouse or something that is going to oversee every single NIL dollar contract that is more than $600 has to go through this approval process in order for them to sign off on it and for the athlete to be paid. And they have an algorithm that they have created to basically estimate what your worth is on the open market in an NIL situation. So how will this all play out? The weird fallout and ramifications of it that maybe people aren't thinking about, and we'll talk about that. We'll start the final hour there next on 1080 The Fan.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.